Dazmi, Dazmi! Something wonderful has happened!
What? Slow down. You sound like an overstimulated rich kid on Christmas morning.
Have you been outside?
Of course not. I've been chained to your water boiler since August.
Blade Runner is here.
What?
Blade Runner is happening outside.
What the hell are you talking about?
We did it. We made it. We made it to November of 2019. Blade Runner is right now. The future is now the present. We're living in a cyberpunk dystopia.
And yet from where I'm sitting, it still looks just like a Texas Chainsaw Massacre dystopia underneath rural New England.
Well, that's only because you're not off-world. I wonder if it's RoboCop in Detroit yet.
I'm pretty sure it is.
Blade Runner.
Does this mean we're not doing a Halloween episode?
Oh, shit. I knew I forgot more than just feeding you. We should probably knock that out.
Did any good movies come in the mail?
No, but some monster movies came. Why don't you slide this into the VCR? Halloween episode in mid-November, I guess. I'm currently feeding Dazmi blemished candy corns that I got on discount to supplement his nutritional intake. Since we did take quite a long time to get this episode out, I'm afraid we had to improvise costumes. Dazmi, I see that you're dressed as a kidnapping victim with a vitamin C deficiency.
And I see you're dressed as Hugh Hefner without the class.
Yeah, well, I will tell you that my coffee is, in fact, Irish. I just regret that I'm not drinking it out of a martini glass.
Well, I'm down here and all I've got is blemished candy corns, chicken feet, and I found a bottle of vodka, so that's what I've been subsisting on.
Oh, you found my pee bottle!
Fuck. Before we get started, any old business we need to cover?
Yes, we do have quite a few weeks of events and happenings. Most notably, I recently had the pleasure of hosting two of our users, Dafty Kins and Kitten, who joined me up here on the farm for a little while. You probably heard their laughter and merriment coming down through the floorboards. Among the adventures we went on was a visit to the American Classic Arcade Museum. This is supposedly one of the largest arcades in the world. It's up here in New Hampshire. Among the things we enjoyed was a really huge collection of vintage pinball machines from the 70s. I think a lot of pinball fans are familiar with the era of the 90s on. Things like Medieval Madness and, you know, Indiana Jones is also very popular. This was from a more classic era where much, much more of what was going on the table is mechanical. We also played on the Hercules machine, which is allegedly the largest pinball machine in the world. And the pinball itself is about the size of a ball on a pool table. That was pretty cool. Also, there were plenty of electronic arcade games we took in. I enjoyed some classic Exidy or Excitey. I'm not really sure how it's pronounced. They produced a number of shooters in the 80s, among them Crossbow, Chiller, and also, relevant to history, was Death Race, a game that they produced that resulted in an early video game moral panic, I believe in the late 80s. And also, I had the pleasure of playing Computer Space, which I think some of our listeners might not be aware of. This was the first video game arcade game. It predates Pong, coming out in 1971, and it's sort of an arcade adaptation of Space War, which nerds and hackers played on their PDP machines in the 70s. And that was just a wonderful piece of history to participate in.
So, you said space. That was 1962, I think, right? Space War?
Space War came out much earlier. Computer okay. Space, the commercial arcade game, came out in 1971. Okay,
yeah. Right.
And one of the challenges in making that a commercial product was that it needed a computer to play this computer game. And at the time, a computer was still, you know, a major company expense that would be decided upon by people in suits and ties and sharp haircuts.
Which color case was it in? I'm looking on Google. Looks like they had yellow, green, and blue arcade cases for it.
Oh, man. I believe it was the red one.
Oh, there's a red one? Oh, cool.
Yeah, Daftykins actually took video of me playing the game, which is a file that I will keep close to my heart for a very long time. But I don't have it in front of me, and my memory is shot, so I'm afraid I can't tell you what color it was exactly off the top of my head. I'm sorry, listeners.
Well, if you're eating the same diet I eat down here, it's no wonder your memory's all fucked up.
I'm actually eating a much finer diet than yourself. There was a little bit of a surf and turf thing going on. I had a nice steak with some scallops earlier. The hors d'oeuvres were just a simple foie gras thing.
No remaindered Halloween candy?
Of course not. I mean, that shit's discounted now. That would be unsuitable for my present arrangement. Daftykins and Kitten, in coordination with Murky Banana and Anastasius, actually presented me with this swanky smoking jacket that those of you watching on the live feed can see me in right now.
We do not have a live feed.
All of the big podcasts have live feeds, and we are never going to get that Casper Mattresses deal if we don't plug the live stream.
Well, I'd prefer a MeUndies deal, but we still don't have a live feed.
Well, our listeners don't know that. If I make mention of the live feed, they'll just think it's some stupid Facebook button that they've never clicked.
We do not have a Facebook page either.
Look, can we just do the episode?
Yeah, we'll just cut this part out.
All right. So they presented me with this swanky smoking jacket that those of you on the live feed can see. So as you can tell, my life is now all about fast cars, fast women, and complicated baccarat games.
Yes, so we also, this September in the Skiffy IRC channel, you can find us on irc.freenode.net in Skiffy if you want to join us. Snaked hosted a Sword and Sorcery September. We watched two movies, Deathstalker and The Sword and the Sorcerer.
Yeah, and I would say we had a lot of fun. Deathstalker was a film that I hadn't seen before. I knew going in from a couple of online comments that it has a reputation for being a bit rapey. And
it was very, very rapey.
It was. And you know, I appreciate that the medieval economy was such where land ownership and authority over it was used to control the local economy and all that. But in this particular film, the access to women seems to be the principal means of bartering. And I can't help but wonder if the Deathstalker society could be improved by introducing a simple system of coinage and debts and basic accounting. And that way, women don't have to be the money.
Yeah, I mean, even shiny rocks would probably be an improvement over what was going on.
You know, I think if we could bring this up to an early Indus Valley culture or maybe Assyrian, Babylonian something, and their means of trade, that would be a major advance for the kingdom of the wizard guy with the spider web veins on his bald head. The other one was The Sword and the Sorcerer, which is a movie that I guess has a reputation reaching a lot of people that has somehow missed me. And I gotta say, I enjoyed the hell out of it. It was just a simple fantasy story, you know, exactly what was on the tin. It was well executed for the low budget production that they were working with.
Well, I mean, it was more than just a basic fantasy. The dude had a dual blade sword that would shoot blades out of it with compressed air or something.
I assumed that was magically accomplished, although I suppose it's possible that the stored energy within the pneumatic system that propelled the sword was perhaps magically compacted.
If you want to get all picky about it, sure. But it was a cool sword.
Yes, it was. So I enjoyed these viewings. It's important to me in that I'm looking for my new sword and sorcery movie. Conan the Barbarian is the big one that everybody knows and loves. And I read a lot of the Conan stories when I was younger, and it's fun to see the film visually realizing that world. Although it might seem kind of silly listening, one thing that always punches me in the gut when I see that is that whenever there's a riding scene and a horse goes down, that was accomplished by the use of a tripwire, and that horse is really going down. And in the history of cinema, many, many, many horses have been killed doing that. And so it's a movie that puts a little bit of churn into my stomach that isn't a consequence of anything in the story. And so I think The Sword and the Sorcerer might be my sword and sorcery movie now. It looked good. It was fun. It looked good in kind of that Legends of the Hidden Temple way with lots of foam features in the background. And I loved that.
Sure. Yeah. It was fun.
So anyway, we're not going to spend a whole lot of time reminiscing on these two movies because we actually watched two other monster movies together. The first was Beach Girls and the Monster. Dasmi, can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, the first thing you need to know is this low-budget movie has music done by Frank Sinatra Jr., which is pretty fun. So the basic gist of it is 60s surfers and the surfer girls like to bounce around on the beach at night, and some of them start to get murdered, and it's a whole mystery thing. Is it some monster coming out of the sea to kill them? It's a pretty good movie. It's fun. It's enjoyable.
And I'll add that monster often, at least one of the monster's kills, is by roughly gripping the victim's shoulders, and that apparently accomplishes the deed.
The death shake.
You know, I appreciate that you appreciated the music. Something that jumped out at me in the first few minutes is that the film is very conscious about its use of sound. Like, but before we're even 10 minutes in, there's dancing on the beach, there's the reveal of the monster, there's the first kill, and the arrival of the police. And all of it gets its own theme. All of the action has a beat to it that's set by the score. And yeah, the music was done by Frank Sinatra Jr. before he got famous on Family Guy.
Yep. I think they got their money, or their money's worth on the music. The monster costume, maybe not quite as much. But, you know.
Well, the monster costume looked like something that was pulled off the set of a Godzilla movie.
I was just thinking the same. Or it looks like some of the movies that Mystery Science Theater 3000 does.
Right, like, right. Maybe also... Maybe a Godzilla copycat movie.
Yeah, exactly. Low budget Japanese movies.
Right.
Which it's not bad. It's, you know.
No, it does what it needs to do. You don't need a great looking iconic monster for a movie like this to work. You need even just a silly monster. And that's exactly what it was. I loved that the monster was shown literally and in good light almost right away. They're not teasing us with that, oh, the best movie monster is the one you never see crap. You know, they had something ridiculous and they just boldly put it in front of the camera.
Yeah, not just that, they did facial close-ups of the monster with its eyes, right? Eyes and teeth that don't move. It was good. It was fun.
Right. The eyes were articulated. That was a nice touch.
Yeah. I'm looking through stills right now. Also, if you're into 60s bikinis and bouncing, there's a lot of that.
That's right. I mean, the sexual revolution is taking off in this movie. You know, teenagers have taken to the beach in their swimsuits with their exposed midriffs. And the antagonist character is responding to that throughout the whole movie. And, you know, the characters in general were surprisingly well written in this.
Yeah, there was actually some depth, some character development. I'm trying to remember. There was even some speculation by the characters as to who might be the monster that turned out not to be the monster. There was some writing, some thought put into it.
That's right. The character Mark was in the movie to be kind of a red herring.
Yeah.
Right.
I couldn't remember his name.
I have the IMDb page open in front of me. For those of you who do
watch
the movie. I'm just
looking at the Google images of the Bikini Girls.
And I think its copyright must have never been renewed because it's free for viewing on YouTube. You're not going to remember the names of any of the characters. We have to cheat to record this show.
That's right.
Right. But, pretty much every character had some thought put into them. The protagonist is interested in a free life, setting aside parentally imposed inhibitions, growing up with a view to the wider world, and is preoccupied with his girlfriend. Then there's a Mrs. Robinson character, Vicky, who is this unrepressed, somewhat older woman who's punching back against the conventional conservative repression that's being ineffectively imposed by her husband. And then her husband, the protagonist's father, doesn't know what to make of any of this crazy new world he's in. His life's work and sensibilities of the previous generation are pretty much being rejected by his son, and he's also being simultaneously rejected in his marriage by his second wife. And it's kind of Freudian. His son is a member of a new, scary, sexually open culture, and his wife is dismissing him for her own separate sexual enterprises elsewhere. And that's a lot coming out of a crappy monster movie.
It is. You went way deeper than I thought you were going to go on this one.
Oh, man, there's subtext here if you look for it.
You looked. You definitely looked. No, really, though, I actually did enjoy this movie. It kind of gets panned on IMDb, but I thought it was actually a pretty good movie. It was fun to watch. Compared to the one we're going to speak about next, it was extremely well done. It was worth watching. You should watch it on YouTube.
Yeah, right. I mean, there's really no reason not to. The running time is, I think, an hour and 5 minutes, something like that.
Yeah.
So you don't even need to commit an evening to it. If you're into low budget horror of the era, You're going to have fun with it. The movie is having fun with itself. You know, it's written... You're right. This is not high art. It's put together in sort of a slapdash way, but, you know, it's aware of serving its audience that is at the drive-in that night.
Yeah. And we didn't mention it was made in 1965. So that's kind of the context of when it was made. It was also known as Surf Terror, which I think is maybe even a better title for it than Beach Girls and the Monster.
Surf Terror. I kind of like that. Yeah. I will say, you know, it is imperfect.
What?
The story ends very abruptly. You know, the monster is exposed and it's not through any skill of the protagonist or anything that we've learned, because we just, you know, it's just an accident. And that's because I guess we're close to the desired running time. But if you're at the drive-in and you're not already necking with Mary Sue Jane Bethany Sue Hamilton in the back of your T-Bird by the end of the movie, it's not like a well thought out ending is going to cheer you up.
That's, yeah, they probably expected that in the last quarter of the movie, nobody was going to be watching anyway.
Right.
Just wrap this shit up and let the kids get back to what they do.
There's going to be a variety of reasons that occur for which the audience is not going to care about the ending.
Right. We, however, watched it intently to the very end.
And we were, I think we were all sober and we still enjoyed it.
I was not sober.
Oh, okay. All right.
I'm not sober right now.
You know, I think that is the way to record a podcast.
I agree.
I wish my coffee were just a little bit more Irish right now, because I have to put up with you.
I was going to make coffee, but I'm out of coffee, so vodka.
Ah, yeah, okay. Actually, yeah, I guess I did refill that bottle. Anyway. I think this is something that we both give a thumbs up to. And, hey, if you want to see what an orgy looks like under the Hays Code...
Yes.
Well, yeah. Check out Beach Party and the Monster.
Beach Girls and the Monster, yeah.
It would be terrific if I could get the name of the movie right.
That was the implication. All these people are going to fuck, but we're not going to show you that because it's 1965. Right. So instead we're going to play guitar and sing songs on the beach and there'll be a monster.
Hey, giant. Gang, the first oral contraceptive came out 5 years ago. You know what this movie's about.
Googly-eyed seaweed monster. No, but this one we do recommend. This one is worth watching.
I think so. All right, so should we go into the other one?
Yes. So
Killer Waves.
Yeah. So if in Beach Girls and the Monster, the sexual revolution was just ramping up, in Killer Waves... The sexual revolution has gone way, way off the rails.
You're walking through the wasteland after the sexual revolution bomb has fell upon the cities, and you're surrounded by the ruins of the old age that have passed us.
Sexual nuclear winter is what this is.
All right. Well, yeah. I should probably give some background for this one. Several weeks ago, I discovered James Balsamo. He was the writer, director, producer, cinematographer, and probably also sound mixer and presumably also quadcopter pilot on this movie.
Yeah.
He has a little production house, Acid Bath Productions, which is doing what I guess I would call T&A horror comedy. And
that's accurate.
Right. And he's knocking out at this point a few movies a year. And I was drawn to his content as much for wanting to see the output of one of these little production houses in the digital age as I was to watch a horror movie on the beach.
I think you're
go ahead.
Just looking here at IMDb, in 2020 alone, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. There are 8 productions that are either completed or in post-production by him just in 2020.
I've only seen one of his other movies, which was Hack Job. And I will say that this particular one shows some growth since then.
Okay.
But, well, let's get it. Okay, you sound skeptical.
I do. I just noticed he has a movie completed in 2020 called Hanukkah, which I'm sure is going to be offensive.
We have to watch Hanukkah.
I agree.
We have 8 days on the calendar that we can watch Hanukkah on. So I'll buy you the DVD.
How do we describe Killer Waves?
Well, before we get too far into it, I just want to say, I want to address your size here and just say that I tend to put low budget indie stuff on a different curve than major studio productions and TV shows.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. I'm watching with a very participatory mentality. I'm not expecting that every element... Hang on, I gotta let this cat out. Hold on.
Go ahead and we'll just edit this out. This is why we don't have a live stream. Snake's fucking pets keep coming in.
I need a real fucking studio. All right. So... I'm watching with a very participatory mentality. I'm not expecting that every element is going to be particularly great. You know that not every skill that goes into filmmaking is going to be present and perfect. Like, there are going to be shortcomings with the photography, or there are going to be shortcomings with, you know, pick a part of movies that you care about, and it might not be there. But you're watching also for the pleasure of watching people develop their skills and talents. And so when I sit down and watch something like Killer Waves, in my mind, I don't know the guy, but Balsamo is sitting on the couch next to me.
I think I'm not going to attack the man personally. Wouldn't feel comfortable with him sitting on the couch next to me, I don't think. But do we want to discuss what we didn't like first? Because I have a few nitpicks. You know, even cutting it slack because it's probably made on $500, you know.
You know, a $500 budget would revolutionize the production of this podcast.
That's probably true.
All right. We've given a lot of preamble here, though. So let me just say that Killer Waves is a movie that takes place in a beach town in the lead up to this big surf contest. And there is a monster that is going around and killing people in surf culture.
It seems to take place in 2 beach towns. This is my biggest nitpick. And I get that, you know, they got to do what they got to do, but it's supposed to be on the West Coast. But a good portion of the shots, especially the drone shots, appear to be on the East Coast. That just bothered me because I'm from California and I know that the beaches in half the movie weren't in California. It's not that big of a deal. I just noticed it.
You know, you had raised that objection when we spoke earlier, and I looked into it a little bit. It looks like most of the filming locations were actually on Long Island, and I believe the opening news segment was filmed with, I'm pretty sure that was Coney Island in the background.
There's palm trees on Coney Island?
Okay, maybe not.
Yeah, 'cause there are, I don't think so.
The Ferris wheel looked right.
No, I think it might be when I was
clicking around in Google Street View, I thought, oh yeah, that could be it.
This is Dasmian post-production. I have to admit that Snaked was right. The beach amusement park shots are in fact Coney Island, and the palm trees I saw were in a cutscene, not actually in those scenes. Yeah, I mean, the other thing is it's supposed to be on the West Coast from what I can tell, but the cops in the movie have like a thick Boston accent, or at least one of them does.
Well, you know, they're borrowing from all those Mark Wahlberg movies.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Right. No, I think if you're having fun with cop cliches, your characters have to be either Irish or Italian.
Certainly.
And from New York or Boston.
Yeah. No, it can't be from LA. That's because what does an LA cop sound like?
Nobody cares.
Exactly. But other than the location problems, which apparently was just me being a dick.
It was.
The audio drove me crazy because it sounds like it was filmed on camcorders with tapes, like actual tape camcorders where you could hear the motor running most of the time.
The audio at times sounds like we recorded it.
I mean, I spent $50 on a microphone, which I think
spent 40.
They probably could have done that too. But they did have to pay for all the titty actresses, so.
All right. Well, hey, let me bring this to some positives here.
There are a lot of positives.
I thought the villain was fantastic.
I agree.
So you can jump on YouTube and watch the trailer, or you can even just look at the box art. The villain is in an antique diving suit with a big skull underneath the porthole, and this character goes around killing other characters with a harpoon and knives, and I think a trident was used at one point,
and puns,
and every kill is delivered with a wonderfully campy one-liner.
There's one kill, and I don't want to reveal the murder weapon because it's pretty fun, where it's like five or six puns, just as this naked woman is dying, just pun after pun after pun.
That was probably the best kill in the movie. And from a production standpoint, I loved what they did there because it was accomplished with a little prosthetic and I guess a can of SpaghettiOs.
Yeah, I was thinking SpaghettiOs or baked beans or something.
Yeah, or maybe both. I mean, nobody's going to eat that, so you know you can mix those together.
Well, craft services. I mean, gotta say,
I don't think they had. I don't think there was a craft services table on this movie.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, they could. Yeah, it doesn't matter. Yeah, that kill was fun. The puns were fun. You're right. I really do enjoy the dive helmet murderer.
Right. And you complain about the location, but I did feel some beach town vibe from, you know, just a handful of locations. And you believe the culture that the film is drawing its characters out of when it's on screen. I liked that.
Yeah, I agree. No, it's not that it wasn't a problem. I just noticed it, but I don't think it didn't degrade from, you know, my enjoyment of the film.
Okay. But you just had to get that out for your own therapeutic reasons.
I did.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm glad that I and our listeners can support you in.
Look, I've been trapped in your basement since August and I don't get to talk to people very often. So just let me get this out.
All right. It's out there, and now this is your opportunity to heal. And you know what? You know what? You're going to see Hanukkah. It's going to be amazing, and that's going to be like a big hug around your little wound there.
I didn't realize during the movie, but I'm just looking at the IMDb page. The head detective is named Detective Holster, which is awesome.
Oh, man. I wish I had caught that.
That's fantastic.
There was this moment where like the trucker cop is oiling the plastic grip on his pistol.
Yeah.
And you know, most viewers aren't gonna get that, but I love the ineptitude that they're communicating with that.
Yeah, it was, I mean, I wish I would have heard that in the movie because that's good.
Right. So I will say I am on board with your frustration with the sound design. I think one way that you can improve a movie like this is to buy a boom mic and use it.
Yes.
I will say that there were also some strange cinematography choices. You know, it's not often that you see an Italian shot that's framing a group of characters. And a lot of the shots, a lot of the framing of the shots were unframed. The color grading is all over the place. Some scenes are very blue. Some are kind of natural. And some you're not sure what time of day they're supposed to be occurring at. The quadcopter shots were pretty good, though.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to... I watched it with my wife. And as soon as I saw that first, I was like, oh, wow, the East Coast crew has a drone. That was actually pretty cool.
So we talked a little bit about who the audience was for Beach Girls and the Monster. That was a movie that very much knew who it was for. Who would you say that Killer Waves was for?
I'm going to say us.
Who are we?
It's for people who enjoy low budget slasher movies and have spent the last 10 years on IRC talking about movies and stuff. We're the target audience.
I think so. I think if I were to unpack it a little more, I would say that this is for people who are aware of things like Beach Girls and the Monster, or they think they are because they saw Sharknado. I think this is a very socially oriented movie in that it's best viewed among friends, and I think it's also totally aware of itself as material for someone's bad movie night.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Right. Like there it feels no shame sliding right into that category. It does so with a big smile on its face. I think it's also a little bit introspectively oriented in that it's also for the people who are in it or worked on it.
Sure.
Yeah. Like,
they look like they had fun.
I think a Balsamo production is basically a big party with cameras. Like, there was that concert scene in the movie. Mm-hmm. It didn't need to be in the movie, but I liked that it was there because that was the filmmaker sharing a little bit of his world, and it also fit into the surf world. And I know that James Balsamo used to play in bands because he has a DVD out that consists of a lot of his old concert footage. So that was like a personal touch that I didn't need to be there, but I'm glad that it was there.
Yeah, I agree. And actually I related to that part. Just growing up in Southern California, I felt like I'd been to that concert.
Yeah. So
the shitty vulgar punk band.
Right. No, nobody listening has seen this movie. So let me just set up the scene. It's not. Like, right. It's like a four-car garage. The band is right there in the middle, and the party is all around them.
Yeah. And they're playing their hit single, I'm on the rag, so toss it in me, Dumpa, if you want to YouTube that.
You know, it wasn't Frank Sinatra Jr., but this was also kind of a musically oriented movie. It wasn't Jan and Dean coming in. It was garage rock, and it didn't always match the action on the scene, but I enjoyed that it was there for the same reasons that you know, Frank Sinatra Jr. didn't necessarily thematically match what was on the scene, but it became a fun combination.
Sure. Yeah, it was it fit the overall feel they were trying to go for, you know, for the Southern California beach town kind of thing. But I also think it's for James Balsamo. It's for him.
Yeah, I mean, I can't escape the fact that this movie is, you know, there's a vanity element to it. But I think that's also going to be something that's fun for people who make return visits to the Balsamo verse. You know, a lot of the characters in the movie were not really characterized, but I bet if you've watched a few of these movies, you recognize recurring characters, even if they have different names.
Probably, but I mean,
is my guess.
Quentin Tarantino does the same thing, so, you know, he's in good company.
Yeah, sure. No, that is a non-ironic yeah, sure. I think when you come in to a movie like Killer Waves, it's not just... It occurs in a continuum of other films. You got to jump on board the train at some point, and if you continue to watch, I bet you're rewarded for it.
That seems reasonable. Yeah.
Yeah.
I kind of want to see. He's got one coming up soon called I Spill Your Guts 2. That sounds pretty fun.
Oh, well, we need to see I Spill Your Guts first so that we're ready I Spill Your Guts 2.
Yeah.
We might be missing key pieces going into the sequel.
My wife just messaged me, oh my God, the puns. I forgot about all the goddamn puns. She forgot about to talk about those.
For those of you who do not have access to the raw audio file, which is everybody on planet Earth except for Dasmi and myself, his wife actually walked in while we were recording a few minutes ago, and I think she had a much stronger reaction to the movie than the two of us. I enjoyed it. I think you begrudgingly enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it. After about a half hour, I was like, oh, okay, I understand what's going on here. It's not so much a movie as it is this guy's class project that he's really proud of.
Oh, come on.
No, I'm not saying that in a bad way. Like we were just talking about, there's some vanity. It's something he wanted to do, and he had a good time doing it, and that's what it's about. It's not
right, it's inviting you to participate in that good time.
Yes, in about a half hour,
gather friends around you. You know, you weren't there for the party that was the production, but you know, this is your experience for you who couldn't be there that day.
Yes, once I realized what they were going for, I enjoyed it.
So I think this was also a very similar film to Beach Girls and The Monster in that, you know, they're both monster movies about... Oh, shit. Get out of there. Come on.
Oh, my God. The amount of editing I'm going to have to do.
All right. Shut up. So I think this and Beach Girls and The Monster were very similar. The script... theme, monster, killing everybody, all of that. The comparison is obvious. Beach Girls and the Monster was a reflection of a very particular culture, and it plugged into that. This did so too. They were both salacious in their production, in what they're putting on the screen. And, One is for the audience at the drive-in, and the other is for the audience that's in the party that this culture is promoting. That came out better in my head. But Dasmi, let me ask you this: how could it be improved?
I think we covered a little bit of it. A boom mic. Some color correction in post-production would have been helpful.
Or less.
Yeah, or less, yeah. Maybe, I don't know, some lights. Because there were a lot of shots shot indoors that it seems like they might have just clicked on whatever lamp was in the room. So, you know, a little lighting, just a little a little technical work to start would help.
So, yeah, I think I'm with you on the images and the pictures point. I think there are a lot of low-budget filmmakers who would stand to benefit from spending some time just working on your still photography every day. To me, the thing that we haven't touched upon is that there was a fair bit of fluff in the script that didn't need to be there. The opening character introduction and exposition was pretty long and kind of heavy-handed. This was when the reporter was introducing everybody in the movie. And, you know, we're going to be interacting with these people anyway. You don't need to give all their backstories. I think you also need to either expand on the police investigation subplot or just cut it out. They never really did anything with the main cast, and it kind of felt like footage that was shot for a different movie that was edited in. And also, I liked that it seemed like a lot of the dialogue was sort of ad-libbed. You know, it was just stoners talking to each other.
Yeah. Which is probably exactly what it was.
Right. It's just characters inhabiting their subculture.
Mm-hmm.
And this is perfect for the first act. But after that, I want to see them reacting to the plot more. You know, set your party animals up and then have the unholy driver crash the show. Unholy diver crash the show.
Yeah. There were several times watching it where I was wondering why none of the characters seemed to know or react to the fact that their friends were getting murdered.
Yeah.
Which kind of made it more fun to watch, but there's several times where I was like, you know, your friend just got fucking stabbed with a trident, right? You're just going to keep having the party.
But horror movie characters are so ridiculous that that's fine for me. I don't know. You know, if it were something that they were doing deliberately, then that would have been fun.
It felt like they probably were.
Right. Well, I did have fun with this. I think you had fun.
I did. Do we want to just discuss something you did mention you thought was overdone while we were discussing this a couple weeks ago?
What was that?
The gratuitousness of the nudity.
Oh, okay. What did I say?
You felt that the amount of breasts might have been a bit overdone. And I think I agree. Which is odd for me to say, but there's a lot of nudity for no reason, really. Just like, this person's going to be naked now. I don't know. It was fine.
Why don't you walk me into that and I'll just respond to it?
Did you so? Fuck! How am I gonna walk you? The opening scene opens with the chick, the immediate boobs for the big fat guy in the hot tub.
That's and you know what? If you're gonna do a scene like that, I do think you need to be careful with continuity errors, because if you watch the scene just above the waterline, over the course of the action, there are two continuity errors right next to each other. You know what I mean?
I don't remember, so why don't you tell us what those were?
Her bikini was off and then on again.
Oh yeah, it was. You're right.
Again over the right.
Yeah, and yeah.
I mean, that was the point of that scene. So of course that's what you're paying attention to.
The whole movie was continuity. It's fine.
Yeah, yeah. If we haven't established it yet, yes, the movie does have a ton of totally gratuitous nudity. What can you say to that?
It fits in perfectly with what the movie is. It's, you know, like you said, TNA slasher movie, so it works.
Right. I got kind of an 80s movie vibe from that.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of the movie is sort of throwback. Killer Waves.
Do we recommend it? Not with your family.
I think I recommend it if you are the type of viewer to approach a movie as we do and you're in similar company.
Yes. Do not, yeah, we don't recommend it for a family movie night. Don't take it to your mom's
house. Unless you're trying to corrupt your little nephew.
Certainly. if you would like your wife to consider leaving you, watch it.
As yours did, I believe.
I still think she might be.
Right. Do you know if she's contacted attorneys?
I probably.
Okay.
She will if I make her watch any more of these.
So I think underscoring our recommendation is that I want to see more of this guy's movies.
I do too.
Yeah. And I am pretty sure we're going to have fun going in there. There are some points where we were pretty rough on it. But I really want people like James Balsamo to feel a lot of encouragement for what they do. For most people, their movie going experience is going to be the 100 millionth Marvel movie or Star Wars, big franchise stuff. And there's more to it out there. And if there are people who are, you know, using an old digital video camera and some friends they've round up and they've got a big bucket of stage blood and they're having fun, they're contributing to the art by exploring without concern for a whole lot of commercial viability or anything like that. And I am really glad that there are people like that out in the world.
I agree with all that. And in summary, I'm not even going to get that detailed as you did. I will just say that I enjoyed it more than Another Life. And so I think you should watch it.
That might be our calibration point for zero.
That's the bar.
Moving on with the show.
Yeah.
Right. Well, hey, we have some upcoming events coming on in the channel. We're going to be doing a viewing of UHF that might happen. It's probably going to happen before the show comes out. One of our users, Lando, has been pushing me very, very hard to see this. It's a Weird Al movie, and apparently it's going to be an experience for me. I think it's not sci-fi, but I think we're going to be watching The Warriors, late 70s gangland action movie, and that's going to be a lot of fun. And also, I think probably, hopefully, maybe, we're going to be watching Space Mutiny as a group, carrying on with the tradition of one of our users, Emeritus, Molly, who made that one of her holiday movies. It is low budget sci-fi and it's a lot of fun. Come join us.
So what's coming up that you're excited about?
Well, this is not sci-fi, but I do want to point out that The Far Side from Gary Larson is apparently making a return. If you go to the website, there is a fun illustration of some of the Far Side characters. I mean, to the extent that the Far Side ever had characters, being defrosted in a giant frozen block of ice. And underneath that is a caption that says, "Uncommon, unreal, and soon to be unfrozen. A new online era of the Far Side is coming."
I had no idea. That's actually pretty cool.
Isn't it? I mean, I don't know if it's going to be new content or if, you know, you're going to be able to subscribe to the online equivalent of one of those coffee table books that was on everybody's coffee tables in the 90s.
Yeah.
But whatever it is, I will be happy and excited to return to Gary Larson's humor. How about you? What are you excited about, Dasmi?
I'm excited. Rick and Morty premieres this evening. Looking forward to seeing season 4.
So now all of you know when we recorded this show.
Yes.
And when it's coming out. And you know exactly how long we spend screwing around doing way too much editing.
Yes. It's November 10th.
We're not very good at this.
You'll probably hear this sometime mid-December, but...
Right.
So let me rephrase that. I'm excited to have watched season 4 of Rick and Morty.
Oh yeah, yeah. And what did you think about the giant muffin monster with all the bloody frosting?
It was awesome. It was yeah, it was great.
Oh yeah, and I also liked when the test tube sprayed milk all over the place, and you know, you knew it wasn't milk, but they got sponsors to worry about.
Of course, yeah.
Right. Oh yeah, Rick and Morty, yeah.
All right. What are you not excited about?
The Rise of Skywalker.
I think I'm with you on that one.
All right. Most of the Disney Star Wars movies have been disasters, even when they were just words on the page. And again, this one is written, directed, and produced with J.J. Abrams, so you know it's going to be another J.J. Abrams night at the movies.
Yay.
How about you? What are you not excited about?
We've never spoken about politics on this show, and I don't intend to, but I am not excited for fucking the election season.
I know a really terrific hemlock tea recipe.
That sounds delicious.
All right. Well, hey, I do have one very special announcement that I have not warned Dasmi that I would be making on the show, but I'm going to do it anyway. Dasmi, my co-host, has impregnated someone, and I believe his wife even knows about it. Dasmi, tell us about that.
Yes, I've impregnated a woman, and it's the one that I meant to impregnate, so all systems are go.
All right. And in seriousness, I do just want to express support for you on behalf of your friends and all that. And also reiterate my intention to play a major role in your child's moral instruction and growth.
Yeah, I was just thinking this time next year, I'll be recording this show with a child sitting on my knee being exposed to all this shit. So that...
But you won't need to worry about that until about 24 months out.
No, I'm getting baby a pair of earbuds and just listen in.
So at this point, I'd like to announce the podcast's first contest. While it is our tradition that a child should have to earn their name, either on the battlefield or in the wilderness, it's always good to have one in mind ahead of time. So I'd like to crowdsource this one. I'd like to invite all of our listeners to submit their suggestions for this kid's name. And if you supply the winning entry, I have a major prize for you.
Ooh, a major award.
That's right. It is an autographed copy of the novelization of Mortal Kombat, the motion picture.
That is a very major award. I will say currently this baby is known as either Baby X or Felipe. Felipe, just because my niece decided it was named Felipe for now.
Awesome. And also, the autograph on the book is from me.
Oh, that's less major. Did you have anything to do with the production of this document?
Oh, absolutely not.
Awesome. So you just ruined a book with your name. You just... drew on a perfectly
well,
good book.
Well, I would like to think that I added value to the book with my Sharpie.
Right.
And while I've not read it, I'm sure I made it better.
You probably did.
Right. Well, hey, as we wrap up here, I do want to say that we have somehow managed to reach a little bit beyond our expected audience. And yeah, I just
who the fuck
ask,
is listening to us?
You,
who are all you people?
Who are you? Why are you listening?
Yeah, no, we honestly do want to know, because we know the number of people who we know who are listening to this show, and there's quite a bit more of you people listening than should be, which is good. But
and that's great.
Who are
that's
you?
Wonderful.
Who the hell are you people?
Right, right. How can we make your experience with the big dumb object more offensive? Well, in any case, we should probably tell you how to get in touch.
Yes. So this podcast started as an IRC community on the Freenode Network in the channel Skiffy. If you're not familiar with IRC, and I'm betting most of you are not, because why would you be? We have instructions on how to connect available on our website, which is skiffy.club, skiffy.club. So if you go there, you can connect. We have a web client, right?
No, but we link to somebody else's.
Okay, well, close enough. So with very little effort, you can come in and talk to us, which we suggest that you do.
Or you can drop us an email. If you have any abusive comments, DMCA takedown requests, or ideas for Dazmi's child's name, you can go ahead and send a note to dazmi@skiffy.club.
And if you'd like to reach Snaked, maybe you'd like to send him some more expired Halloween candy that he can give to me. Or if you just want to know...
No quarters.
No quarters. Or if you just want to know why the fuck he can't keep his pets out of the studio when we're recording, snaked@skiffy.club would be how you'd reach him.
Or for booking information, moving money out of Nigeria, or sponsorship information for your mattress company, you can reach us both and the hundreds of people working behind the scenes on this show at podcast@skiffy.club.
Hey, hon, you want to tell what you thought of Beach or Killer Waves? She just gave me the finger. Can you actually close this door so they go out? So we'll probably cut this out.
Could she hear me?
She can hear you now, I think.
All right. Hey, you there?
I am.
All right. So on a scale from 10 all the way down to the papyrus typeface, how would you rate the movie?
Oh my god, where does Comic Sans land?
That's a whole different dimension.
Here's the thing.
I kind of want that hour and a half of my life back.
She not only hated the movie, when we were done, she hated me for making her watch. She was like viscerally angry with me for making her watch it.
Oh.
Yeah.
I spent $15 on that movie.
Oh man, that hurts.
She didn't enjoy him on the rag, so toss it in me dumpa either.
Why do you have to remind me? I blocked that all.
You might end up on the show.
That's fine. I feel so honored.
She didn't. This episode. Yeah.
He has 6 new movies coming out this year.
Oh, great. Are we going to do a marathon?
Yes.
We're going to do his Hanukkah movie.
Yes, he's got a movie coming out in 2020 called Hanukkah, which we're pretty sure is going to be very offensive.
Oh my gosh, like he's still doing stuff.
Oh, you check this out. Look,
we ought to bring a rabbi onto the show to provide us spiritual guidance throughout the experience.